The first lesson comes from the Gospel according to St. Matthew from chapter 27. This story happens on Friday, just before sunset. When it was evening, there came a rich man from Arimathea named Joseph, who also was himself one of Jesus' disciples. Joseph went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus, and then Pilate ordered it to be given to him. So Joseph took the body and wrapped it in a clean linen cloth and laid it in his own new tomb, which he had hewn from rock. He then rolled a great stone to the door of the tomb and went away. And Mary Magdalene and the other Mary were there, sitting opposite the tomb. And then the story of Sunday morning, also from the Gospel of Matthew. After the Sabbath on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to the tomb, and suddenly there was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord descending from heaven came and rolled back the stone and sat upon it. His appearance was like lightning, and his raiment white as snow. For fear of him, the guards shook and became like dead men. But the angel said to the women, "Don't be afraid, for I know you're looking for Jesus, who was crucified. He's not here. He's been raised, as he said. Come, see the place where the Lord lay. And then go quickly and tell his disciples, he's been raised from the dead, and indeed he's going ahead of you to Galilee. There you'll see him. This is my message for you." And so they left the tomb quickly with fear and great joy and ran to tell the disciples. And suddenly Jesus met them on the way and said, "Greetings." And they came to him and took hold of his feet and worshiped him. And Jesus said to them, "Don't be afraid. Go and tell my brothers and sisters to go to Galilee. There they will see me." Pray with me. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our rock and our Redeemer. Amen. So when you come to the end of each of the four Gospels, doesn't matter which one you're reading, you're going to encounter a minor obscure actor with just a walk-on part who appears out of nowhere, disappears just as quickly, and is never heard from again. His name is Joseph of Arimathea, and he is the one who goes to Pontius Pilate and convinces him to hand over Jesus' bruised, beaten, bloodied body after the crucifixion. And then Joseph loans Jesus his own private tomb, and I use the word loan intentionally. He doesn't give it because, as it turns out, Jesus won't need his borrowed grave for long. Now, who is this Joseph of Arimathea? And what makes him more important in all four Gospels than, for instance, the Good Samaritan, or the prodigal son, or the Magi, or the shepherds, or Zacchaeus? Joseph appears quadruple the number of times as those other events. Who is he, and where does he come from? Where is Arimathea? Well, that's just the point. No one knows. We have some good guesses, but we're not sure. This cryptic character comes out of nowhere and is never heard from again. The New Testament scholar Dale Bruner calls Joseph of Arimathea the man who did just one thing. I love that. The man who did just one thing. But what a thing he did. Yes, you can't have Easter without Joseph. And actually, as it turns out, it's possible Joseph of Arimathea did more than one thing. You see, because in the New Testament, Joseph's story is so lean. In all four Gospels, it's so lean. Matthew, for example, tells it in 5 short verses, less than 100 words. And when the Christian church encounters a Bible story that is so terse and lacking in detail, the church likes to fill in the background with myth and legend. And so, for instance, tradition teaches that Joseph is Mother Mary's uncle, which makes Joseph Jesus' great uncle. And not only that, but they say Joseph of Arimathea is the one who first brought Christianity to the British Isles in the first century. And when he gets there, weary with his journey, he stabs his walking stick into the earth, and it instantly sprouts branches, leaves, and flowers. This is a real tree. It's called the Glastonbury Throne. They say it sprang from Joseph's walking stick. And a walking stick is not the only thing he brought to England with him. Did you ever wonder how King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table even knew about the Holy Grail, the chalice Jesus drank from at the Last Supper? Joseph took the Holy Grail to Calvary at the crucifixion and filled it with Jesus' blood after he was gone, which instantly made it, of course, the most sacred relic in Christendom and gave it miraculous healing power. Joseph took it to England and buried it in the earth, and King Arthur and his ilk have been looking for it ever since. Well, that's all a bit sketchy, to be honest with you. It's probably all just myth and legend, and I will continue to think of Joseph of Arimathea as the man who did just one thing. This quiet Joseph is so important in all four Gospels that he's mentioned there. That's something, a distinction that not even Peter, the future Pope, nor John, Jesus' best friend, can merit. All four Gospels. And some of you have parsed my sermon title this morning already, Two Quiet Josephs. Because you will notice that in this gospel, in Matthew's gospel, Matthew bookends Jesus' story with two quiet Josephs. It's so shapely and elegant, this gospel. At the beginning, a modest carpenter to midwife Jesus into this world, and at the end, an undertaker to escort him out of it. Midwife at the beginning, undertaker at the end, two quiet Josephs. Neither of them ever says a word, at least not in direct discourse. It's their actions that matter. And so, two short points today: Thanksgiving and motivation. First, Thanksgiving. Is there a quiet Joseph in your life who came into it for just one thing and then disappeared from it? A person who did just one thing. Maybe it was your fourth grade teacher who wouldn't give up on you. Every page you scanned was just alphabet soup, all mixed up, but she wouldn't give up, and she eventually taught you to read. You were only in her classroom for 9 months, and then she disappeared from your life, but she is the woman who did just one thing. Her name is Josephine. Or maybe it was the friend you made in the seventh grade when the cool kids ignored you and the cheerleaders tormented you and the athletes swatted away every shot you didn't want to take away anyway and the bullies feasted on your lunch money. He was just as socially clueless as you were, but you made your halting way all the way to your senior year. You learned about girls together. You played Nintendo. You joined the chess team. You started the Star Wars fan club. And then after graduation, you went to the University of Wisconsin, and he went to UCLA, and you haven't heard from him since. He was the boy who did one thing. His name was Joseph. Or maybe it was the boss who gave you a job when she had no jobs to give, and a chance when you thought there were no chances left. She died of cancer months after she hired you, but you were on your way. She was the woman who did one thing. Her name is Josephine. Or maybe it was the friend who swooped in and stayed when your child was hit by a car and you just wanted to die too. You just wanted to die. But she swoops in and she stays and she stays and she stays and she absorbs in her body the percussion of your rage until it ebbs away and now you're okay. You believe in God again. You believe in life again. She doesn't come around anymore. She's disappeared from your life. But she was the woman who did one thing. Her name is Josephine. So much for Thanksgiving. How about motivation? Are you a quiet Joseph to anybody? Anybody at all? Look, we can neither create new life at the beginning nor raise the dead at the end. But we can be midwives and undertakers. We can usher new life into this world. And we can dig the dirt in the cemetery where resurrection happens. I may be the man who did only one thing, but without that one thing, there is no Easter morning. Do you remember how Mitch Albom's wife, Janine, plays the role of Quiet Joseph to Maury Schwartz in Tuesdays with Maury? During a newspaper strike, sports writer Mitch Albom travels from Detroit to Massachusetts every Tuesday to visit his beloved professor from his student days at Brandeis University. Maury has ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, and is dying by inches. So every Tuesday, the unemployed sports writer Mitch Albom flies 800 miles from Detroit to Massachusetts, and on one of these Tuesday pilgrimages, he brings his wife, Janine. And when they get there, Maury says, "Mitch tells me that you're a professional singer." And she says, "I am." And Maury says, "Mitch tells me you're pretty good." She blushes, she looks down at the ground. She says, "No, I'm not, he just says that." And Maury says, "Will you sing something for me?" Now, Mitch has heard this request of his wife hundreds of times. Whenever anybody finds out you're a professional singer, they say, "Will you sing something for me?" But Janine is not only shy, she's a perfectionist. She always politely declines because she needs a seated, attentive audience and proper amplification and decent accompaniment. She always politely declines, which is what Mitch expects to happen right now, which is when she sings.
I see your face in every flower.
And when Mitch notices the tears streaming down Maury's cheek, he realizes that of all the times he's heard his wife sing, he's never heard her sing quite like this. Now, Janine Album can neither cure the sick nor raise the dead, but she can usher a dying man off this mortal coil with a transcendent serenade. Listen, do you hear the whisper of the rustling shroud? Do you hear Joseph groan as he heaves Christ's body into his own virgin tomb? Can you hear the shovel scraping the dirt in the cemetery where resurrection happens? Now feel it. Do you feel the earth trembling beneath your feet? The rocks riven, the vast universe itself fractured by a blinding light too bright and beautiful for words. Friends, that's the Easter promise. Our story is not over. There is resurrection, and it begins when somebody is willing to do just one thing.